Involvement with the criminal justice system is life-changing. It matters.
Having a justice system that works is a really important part of a democratic society.
I'm Penelope Gibbs, Director of Transform Justice.
I'm Rob Allen. I've worked in and around criminal justice all my career.
This is the Transform Justice podcast, throwing light on the criminal justice system.
Hearing from people who know.
It's about whether the system's fair.
And what can be done to make it better.
Today we'll be discussing a very emotive crime. People being violent or abusive towards police officers or people who work for the NHS. We're focusing on a new report on this subject from Transform Justice itself. I'm joined as ever by Rob Allen and by two guests, Katrina McLaughlin, solicitor for Stoco Partnership Solicitors, and Mark Brown, former police officer and PhD student at Southampton University. Rob, the government has just increased the maximum sentence for what they call assaulting an emergency worker, which counts NHS workers and police, from 1 year to 2 years maximum. What's the kind of scrutiny and debate there's been about this increase in the maximum?
Well, when the Conservatives published their manifesto in 2019, they said they would consult on doubling the maximum penalty. When they won the election, they did consult in 2020, but they only consulted with about 80 organisations, the vast majority employers or representatives of emergency workers. Very few other people were consulted. I was interested to see what the consultation responses were, but they refused to publish those. Ones that I have seen, even the Magistrates Association, were pretty sceptical and questioned whether it was really needed. But in the big crime bill that passed just before Easter, it's now the law.
But you or I can't actually see the response to that original consultation.
No, I made a Freedom of Information request, but it was declined, not in the public interest.
Katrina, this offence, which is called assault on emergency worker, sounds very serious and attracts up to 2 years in prison now, or any minute now. What does it actually involve? Can you give an example?
Yes. Recently, one of my clients was going through a mental health breakdown. He was in the process of being sectioned. He'd been displaying erratic behaviour in public, and that's why the police had arrested him initially. And they realised that perhaps there was something more going on with him. And to the credit of the police officers, they did take him to hospital, and that is rare. And it was there that he became distressed. When nurses tried to look at him, he was pushing them away and also kicking out at police officers who were trying to restrain him so the nurses could care for him. And as it happened, the nurse who had been looking after him decided on reflection she didn't want to press charges against him, recognising that perhaps he had been in a distressed mental state and hadn't meant to do what he did. The police officers took a different view and charges were pursued in relation to assaults on them, a kick to one of the officers and a push to another.
So was he so ill he was actually sectioned?
He was initially sectioned, but under a 28-day observation. After the 28 days he was discharged, then at that point he was charged with the criminal offences against the officers.
So just before he was sectioned, he lashed out. Then he was sectioned for nearly a month. And as soon as he came out, he was actually prosecuted for lashing out just before he was sectioned.
Yes. Unfortunately, it's incredibly common. That's the way it happens. And I've had a lot of clients who have been sectioned for even longer and spent time in mental health institutions. And at the point they are discharged from the section, they then are charged.
It sounds like, from what you're saying, Katrina, that you don't think that prosecuting people for that offence is always justified or ever justified. What's your take on it?
It would be not always, because it's not acceptable that police officers, nurses, other healthcare professionals go to work and get assaulted or abused. That should not happen. But there are certain circumstances where it's so clear that the person involved is not mentally stable, not mentally culpable for what they're doing, especially if they're so unwell that they get sectioned immediately afterwards, then we've got to ask ourselves, why are we criminalising in those circumstances? More care needs to be taken as to what cases are prosecuted. For example, I have one client who has autism, and so often in a public situation, he can get aggrieved and upset when people invade his space. Police officers try to speak to him and take him to a different area, but don't realise that he's got autism, and that they then invade his space and he lashes out to get them away. And then he gets charged with assault emergency worker. And the difficulty is that it is a police charge that can be done without an interview, just on the evidence of officers. So often they'll charge my client, and when I get to court, I then have to explain, well, look, this is the mental health background. The Crown Prosecution Service then review it and don't proceed. But by that point, he spent maybe 24 hours in a police cell.
Mark, you were a police officer for many years. Were you often assaulted?
Luckily, I wasn't often assaulted. I have been assaulted and got into many situations where things have escalated. One of the issues when you're policing is that if you come across somebody who is possibly in a mental health crisis, police stations are deemed as a place of safety, especially if you're working in more rural areas. I was based in Dorset, so our mental health hospitals, we only had two of those in the whole county. There's only a handful of places you could take people when that situation happened. I mean, I recall when on a very cold February night, we had a concern for welfare of somebody who was in a mental health crisis. He wanted to commit suicide, said he was going to throw himself into a river. As we got there, we actually saw him enter the water. We didn't hesitate at the time and jumped straight in after him and managed to get him out of the water. Twice he tried to punch me in the face and missed, thankfully. When we got him back to the shore, he was struggling a lot until the cold and everything had kind of kicked in and kind of incapacitated him. We then asked for an ambulance to come and check him over. And although he was only a few miles away from the nearest mental health hospital, they said that they haven't got the capacity there. And we all looked at each other and said, what are we going to do? You know, this guy is in crisis. He obviously needs checking over physically, which he was by the paramedics, so they'd done their part. But the next stage was, where do we go with this person? He's not committed any offences. He hadn't actually struck me in the face, but had he done so? It's then my call about whether I would then want to take that further. And I think one of the underlying factors at the moment for the police services is that we've got this legislation now brought into place about assaulting emergency workers, and it's the only way we're going to try and reduce it. You'll never fully stop it, obviously, because of the nature of what policing is. But yeah, the onus is on the police now to actually push that forward, that, you know, this is unacceptable and we are not taking any more. So let the system do what it's supposed to do.
But going back to the near punch, in our report, there's a true story about an autistic man who was accused of assault of a police officer for doing an air bite, so literally biting the air. So surely, Katrina, a punch which doesn't necessarily land is still actually could be prosecuted as a sort of emergency worker?
Yes, it can, and it is often. I have noticed myself, being 10 years plus in practice, the increase in the amount of assault police constable charges. That's what the old charge used to be, and the maximum sentence for that was 6 months. This new legislation of assault emergency worker broadens everything. But what I've noticed in practice over the years was behaviour that perhaps would have been tolerated as part of the job. I'm not suggesting it should be, but wouldn't often be charged, and you didn't get so many assault PC charges coming through the court.
Yeah, that's interesting. Mark, you said that there was a kind of move to encourage more use of charges and prosecution, and as you said, taking it forward. Where's that come from? Is that the Home Office? Is it the Chief Constables? Is it the Police Federation? Where's that kind of impetus to use the criminal system for these kinds of incidents coming from?
I think it's not necessarily about increasing the sentencing and all that, but it started with what's called Operation Hampshire, which is an internal operation for the police to look at this problem, because obviously it's been increasing. I looked back recently at figures around about 2010, and you're looking at around about 10,000-11,000 assaults. Now, last year, we're up over 36,000 assaults on police. So within a 10-year period, we're looking, you know, at a substantial increase in assaults on police officers.
Mark, that's a huge increase in the number recorded. Do you think in the old days that they had, you know, maybe not as many, but didn't record as many?
It probably is. It was set in a kind of a culture where, because you're police, you're going to come across violence, you're going to come across a level of, you know, animosity from people, which can extend to obviously physical violence, but obviously there's the verbal as well. It's probably more anecdotal because we haven't got official figures. But if you go back to the 1980s, you had the riots in several years. You had football hooliganism week after week after week. How many police officers would have been assaulted during that time?
So it might have been under-recorded then and over-recorded now.
I wouldn't say it's over-recorded. I would say that it's being recorded. It's been recognised. It's been pushed as a policy. It's kind of like we need to show the evidence that this is the case. So, you know, going back to those heady times of the 1980s, which I just mentioned then, you know, you could have had at least 30,000 assaults in 1 year then.
Yeah. There's a lot of data collected on assaults on police officers, the numbers and so on, but not so much about who's doing it. Is that right? Do you know why that is? Do you think there's a need to understand a bit better who is doing it and the circumstances in which they are committing this offence?
Yeah, and I totally agree. The data is being recorded, but like you said, it's not telling the full story. It's not looking at the specifics. You can only sort it out if you know, and information is crucial.
Katrina, I mean, we've been talking about assaults on police and NHS workers, and obviously a lot of the cases we're talking about are about people who are in mental health crisis or autistic. Would you say in your experience that that's the majority of the cases you deal with, which are assault emergency worker?
Yes, I'd say the vast majority of assault emergency worker cases that I deal with, there's an underlying mental health issue. And especially when it's the emergency worker is a nurse or a doctor, then overwhelmingly, it's probably about 90%. And that's what I'd be more interested about in the statistics as to how many people charged with assault emergency worker have a mental health disorder and were going through a mental health crisis at that point. Because that would be more telling about the best way of dealing with this, because simply increasing the sentence, we all know, is actually not going to make emergency workers safer. It just simply isn't. And actually, the better way of dealing with this by far would be to invest in proper community mental health services. And actually, what I've seen emerge over the years is that the police, unfortunately, are being called in to bridge the gap where the emergency mental health teams have been slashed to the bone and can't go out to the properties and give the person a bed space. So it gets to crisis point, and unfortunately it's falling to the police, and they're not the appropriate organisation to be dealing with people in that mental health crisis. And then they respond in the only way that they really can, in levelling charges, when actually, it could have all been prevented with proper investment in community mental health.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot in what you say about the broader kind of services available and whether the police are the right people to be involved in the way they are. But just focusing for a minute back on this particular offence and the charging that goes on, I think you mentioned in one of the cases that you represented, the Crown Prosecution Service reviewed it because there was a mental health issue and drop the charge effectively. Is that something that's happens all the time, or is it done enough? Is there a systematic reviewing by the prosecutors of whether it's the right thing to do?
Yeah, it's not done nearly enough. And also it takes a lot of work to get them to reach that conclusion. In the end, with that particular case, I had to instruct a psychiatrist to do an independent report at great cost to the public purse. And because it was only once they had the formal recommendation of a psychiatrist saying, look, this person wouldn't have been in any state of mind to form any intent to cause the injury or to cause someone to be fearful of them. In that scenario, the person thought they were Jesus and they were spouting all kinds of nonsensical things. It was clear that they were in a mental health crisis. They were sectioned afterwards. And yet we had to get another report that the CPS could pin that on, because they said, look, the policy is not to drop these charges, because assault of emergency worker now has a different status. It's considered so serious that without a thorough review and something that the Crown Prosecution Service can pin it on, they're not going to drop it.
Katrina, technically, assault emergency worker is the same offence as common assault. Say, two people involved in a fight in outside a pub or something like that. Are you saying that the police and the CPS treat the fight outside the pub very differently to assault on a police officer?
Yes, I would say so. They would treat assault on a police officer far more seriously. Also, the police officer's evidence is believed to be more credible than an average member of the public. And actually, it's harder to argue that it's not in the interests of justice to prosecute a case of assault an emergency worker compared to persuading the Crown Prosecution Service that it's not in the interests of justice when it's just two members of the public.
Don't forget, you know, it's not just the word of a police officer, but it's also things like body-worn cameras in terms of evidence now as well, as probably coincided with this new legislation, you know, and the increase in the sentencing and the tolerance levels on it as well.
And is that partly because we need to take a harsher line with this kind of offending because it will put people off doing it again in the future? It'll deter people. Is that what underlies this harder approach that you've been telling us about?
I think fundamentally it is in terms of, you know, where they're trying to push things. You know, it's unacceptable to assault somebody who's a police officer or a nurse, for etc., who's got a duty of care over somebody. I think they've all kind of mixed in together to try and stop this from happening so much, and to push the onus on the people that are doing it in terms of deterrence. I'm not sure personally myself whether a longer sentence will deter somebody, because you'll find, especially with people that are in mental health crisis or have cognitive conditions, these kind of things either escalate, so the police will turn up and it won't actually be that they've maybe committed an offence, it's a concern for welfare, and then things escalate. And I think obviously their thought processes at the time will not be, oh, if I assault that police officer because he's coming towards me now, I'm going to get 2 years in prison if I do this. It doesn't work like that.
Katrina, would you agree with that? I mean, the government have said themselves that they don't think deterrence really has much of an impact. Its effects are weak and inconsistent according to the science that's been done on it. What do you think? Is deterrence, has it any role to play?
No, I don't think it does at all. And actually increasing the sentence, it's a soundbite for a politician. It does not work.
This issue of people being approached by the police who may not actually have done a crime, is that something that you're familiar with?
Yes, unfortunately so. I had a very sad case, a female client who was herself being abused by her partner. She had learning difficulties and he slowly isolated her from her family, her support network, and introduced her to alcohol and then he'd argue with her, but used it as a form of control by calling the police. And when the police came, he'd plied her with alcohol and she wasn't making sense. He could make sense. So he said to the officers, she's violent, she's aggressive, watch out for her. So the police approach to her was completely different because they had his account that she was a violent, uncontrollable person. And they didn't appreciate her learning difficulties at all. And having not committed an offence, but the police had come into the home, she ended up being charged with multiple offences against police officers that had been called by her abusive partner.
And was she convicted of those offences?
She was, because by the time I got her, she'd been represented by other solicitors and no one had really looked into her mental health background, and it was sent to the mental health diversion panel. They rejected it because of the alcohol and not recognising that that actually was from his abuse. And I've had numerous cases referred to the panel. I've had not a single one accepted for diversion and no reasons given other than it's believed that this was down to drink or drugs. But that's another one where I had to get an independent medical report on her just to outline all of her issues, what her IQ was and why she was reacting in that way. And she got a mental health order and support in helping her to get out of the abusive relationship.
So do you think in some of these cases, at least, the police could deal better with them without the need to charge people and take people through the court process?
Yes, I do. And some of it is a lack of understanding or a lack of knowing that the person has this mental health diagnosis. But unfortunately, what I've experienced is police can often get exacerbated by you raising a mental health as an issue. When you raise autism with some police officers, they say, well, no one's above the law. And if he's committing an offence, we need to arrest him. And not appreciating that the way in which they might speak to someone or invade their personal space might cause a reaction because of that mental health illness.
Mark, what Katrina's illustrating is a situation where the way the police have approached somebody has possibly exacerbated their anxiety and then unfortunately maybe triggered them to lash out. Do you think that the police have enough training in mental health to deal with these situations?
Simple answer to that is no. I worked in counter-terrorism policing in what's called the Prevent Strategy, which is the government's counter-extremism programme, which actually works in what they call the non-criminal sphere. So it's a safeguarding mechanism. But even working in that, where I came across people with autism, with various mental health conditions, either diagnosed or not diagnosed, we didn't even receive that much training around how to deal with people with mental health. You're finding yourself having to literally learn on your feet and to dynamically assess, so in quick time. Unfortunately, you can only go on the information that's given to you. For example, you know, you could come up on a situation in the middle of the street and you'll know nothing about it. And you've got other people that say, well, she has a problem with alcohol, etc. She's violent, blah, blah, blah. Or you can have, if you're lucky enough, that information is there in the background already. We know that this person has a mental health issue. So when you turn up, you need to tread gently with this person to find out what's going on. And that's where I think we need to get to in terms of information, but also the training. And the training in the police is not sufficient enough in terms of dealing with violent situations. It does what it's supposed to do in terms of police officers to arrest people and things like that and to protect yourself. But it doesn't go into the specifics of how do you treat somebody who may have a mental health condition.
So a police constable, how many days training on mental health might they have had before they go out on the streets?
I remember when I first joined, which was 2008, we got a day and a half initially. Then we had some supplementary stuff, which was done either in person or you had to do it on the computer as a self-learning package. When I was working on neighbourhood policing teams, we had some additional training, and that was 3 days, but that was independent of the police. So that was an outside organisation.
So there is some training, but you're saying it needs to be more. We're coming to the end of this discussion. It's clearly a very difficult topic, this one. If you were Home Secretary or Justice Minister and could do one thing to try and improve the way we respond and prevent this kind of assaults on emergency workers, what would that be? Katrina, what do you think?
Well, it would definitely be better resources for community mental health teams, because my experience of the majority of cases of assault emergency worker, there's an underlying mental health issue, which if dealt with better in the community with the care and support that people going through these crises need, then they wouldn't be in a position where they're coming to the attention of the police and then acting violently. And certainly I'd reverse this new legislation of just increasing the sentence, because it doesn't help and actually exacerbates many issues by sending people to prison with very little chance of any extra support or help.
Mark, thinking about your former colleagues, police officers, what one thing would you do if you were Home Secretary to reduce the number of your former colleagues who get assaulted?
It's definitely training, and that's across the board for all emergency workers as well, I think. But I think for police officers, it's definitely training in terms of not just the awareness and the understanding, but how to deal with it at the time. But the caveat I put on that is that there needs to be a definite line drawn here about what the police are there to do. There's been a mission creep over the years where the police end up being the default service because of the lack of other services, especially mental health services, and the capacity of that to actually turn up and deal with it. And very often you'll find police officers are sent to these incidents where there's a concern for welfare or there's somebody who's reported as being in crisis in the street, and the police turn up and they are the ones that have to make the decisions on what happens next. And they haven't been trained properly to do that. They're thinking on their feet most of the time, and that's where mistakes can happen. That's where things can escalate. People in mental health crisis will probably panic or become agitated once they see police officers turning up. I think it may be different if you saw a different agency turning up with no uniforms and those kind of things. If that's going to be the case, that the police are going to have to deal with it, then it needs to be defined. And if it's defined as that, then they need the proper training to do it.
And finally, Rob, what would you do about this crime in terms of reducing it?
Well, very many years ago, when I was a social worker with young people in trouble, I got thumped by one of them. It wasn't terribly serious, but it wasn't very pleasant either. What we were able to do is arrange a meeting a little while later in which he apologised for what he'd done, and we discussed it, and I said how I felt, and that was good. And I think we need to have more opportunities for that kind of thing, whether we call it restorative justice or making amends or apology. I think that's the area I'd look to expand.
So, thanks, Mark, Katrina and Rob. And if you would like to read the Transform Justice report and find out more about assaults on NHS workers and police, do refer to our programme notes. And if you've got an idea for us to discuss, do get in touch on Twitter or email. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much.